97.1 KEGL Fort Worth, Dallas, and Boston in peace of mind. And speaking of peace of mind, I do believe we have Rich Brian standing by live now.
What a coincidence.
I couldn't tell until I could hear that weird sound in the background again. I can always tell you're there, you hear that.
No, what you usually hear is the lighter clicking.
Oh, yeah,
that's a sure sign that Rich is there.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
What we got tonight?
Ole Anthony is here, part two of we carried on somewhat last week, and he will be joining us in just a minute. I want to talk about a couple of things first, and that is that Safeway is, as you all know now, going out of business. And this bothers me because not only do I occasionally shop at Safeway, but I use them as a bank. You know, going cash checks, and I mean, it's a little bit easier than running all the way over the bank. And last night, walked in, cash check, and big sign saying, checks accepted for the amount of purchase only. And broke my heart, not to mention ruined my evening. Because this one had no money. I understand. Ole's pointing at himself saying, I agree with that. I find it hard to believe that a store such as Safeway was across the nation. I mean, they're by far not the only company that has gone out of business and sold out or whatever, but I still find it hard to believe that this is happening. So perhaps a future show will entail the details of the breakdown of Safeway. In the meantime, Mr. Anthony, welcome back.
Welcome. Thank you.
Nice to have you here again.
My pleasure. I had the exact same thing happen to me tonight. This very night.
Stopped in to Safeway to cash a check.
I use them as a bank all the time, just like you. I stopped in to cash a check, and it got ugly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really got ugly. They were, you know, casting aspersions at...
Yes.
but you got to recognize, they're really mad. I mean, these poor employees, they all lost their job overnight.
Exactly.
And, you know, I have some compassion for that. We 141 stores closed overnight.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I guess it's going to affect about 8,000 people. And that's in Texas and the Southeast.
What are we going to do for a bank?
That's a good question. Yeah, instead of writing out SAFE, I'll be CASH and be, you know, going out of my way to go to my bank.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
Anyway, Mr. Anthony was here last week, and in case you didn't hear the show and are not familiar with him, he has done a little bit of everything. He has been a radio talk show host, been involved in television, making movies, owned his own offshore oil exploration company. We didn't talk about that last week, and I want to get into that.
That's a bad period.
Well, it's a bad period now for a lot of people.
That's right.
He has written a book called Crossfire that sold 500,000 copies, and he has been a hostage in Beirut, Lebanon. He has also been fired by Jimmy Swaggart, knows him very well, Pat Robertson, and all the rest. Jim Baker, banned from the PTL Club.
That's right.
Well, so is Jim Baker now, so all's fair.
Me and Jim Baker have something in common.
Yes.
Not what you think.
He is also the
president. I've never met the secretary.
of the Trinity Foundation. It's a public nonprofit communications foundation that meets every night. And welcome back, like I said.
Thank you, Rich.
All right. Let's talk just a little bit to begin about when you were a hostage in Beirut. And you came out of it with the attitude that the United States, because of their Middle East policy concerning Israel, is why we are in the mess that we're in concerning the terrorists and what the terrorists are upset about in Beirut and Lebanon and throughout the Middle East. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that, it wasn't just because of the ordeal I had in Beirut, but it was a result of many years of study that, you know, the U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East is a joke, and it's... we have no idea how those people think, what their value systems are. We try to impose our systems on them, and there's only one country over there that speaks English, because most of them came from here, and that's Israel, so they've become our allies.
Well, for more reasons than that, they are our allies.
Right.
And But that is the problem, in the sense that, I mean, during the course of the week, two other hostages that have since been released, David Jacobson and the Reverend Jenko. Both stated that the United States policy in the Middle East is grossly unfair to the Arabs and completely one-sided as far as Israel is concerned.
You normally can't possibly think that a country, probably the most powerful country on earth, could have a foreign policy based on a mistake in biblical prophecy. And that's amazing. You know, the idea that there's knee-jerk support for Israel since 1948 because evangelical Christianity and a lot of others say that that's the Israel of God.
And that's the chosen.
Chosen people, and we can't do anything. We have to help them and give them $4 billion a year and at the expense of everybody else. So, you know, I know the Holocaust was terrible, and I'm not justifying that in any way, but the idea, you know, as Henry Kissinger once said, if they needed a homeland, why didn't we give them Uganda?
It's, how are we going to do that? I mean, Jacobson's idea is that, and I'm sure he was being a little less than dramatic when he said this, but he said that the Arabs need a great promotions PR company.
They're self-defeating.
They're not helping the Arabs. Helping themselves.
No. There's some kind of a fatalistic flaw in the Arab character that always ends up in. They always end up in trouble. Mm-hmm. And all the way back to the time of Abraham, Ishmael, who was the progenitor. Is that the word?
You're the expert.
Founder. of the Arab nations, it said, the prophecy concerning him was, it said he would be a wild ass among the nations, and or something to that effect. And, you know, it's proven true. There's something that happens in this foreign policy arena in which they're always shooting off their, they're always shooting their foot. And
are we that naive in our leadership and as a country in general to have assumed that we would find a moderate group in Iran to deal with to try and help us release the hostages?
Well, I think it was they were betting on a wing and a prayer. I mean, they were trying anything to secure the release of the hostages, and obviously some mistakes and judgments were made. Turned out terrible mistakes, but in the United States, there's the full range of political spectrum, and part of the people are saying, "Well, why don't we go and bomb them?" Well, who are you going to bomb?
Where are they?
Yeah, where are they? You know, if in Lebanon, if you go in and bomb the area of which apparently the hostages are in Baalbek, you know. Who are you going to bomb? You go in there and you have the best targeted bombs in the world, and you hit a potential ally. There's no easy answer to it. I think the only easy answer is for the United States as a government, as a people, to begin having an even-handed policy in the Middle East. And I think you'll see a lot of the desperate acts of terrorism and other things lessen if that could take place.
Israel will not accept that.
Well,
graciously.
The problem is, anytime anybody says anything like I'm saying, then they say I'm anti-Semitic. Well, I'm not. There's this knee-jerk reaction that somehow anybody that questions even any kind of activity of Israel automatically becomes anti-Semitic. And then, you know, all of the various adjectives are used that... I must say that there's no answer to it that I know of, except to inform the American people and try to have some influence on Congress and the presidency that's just a country, Israel. It's just like any other country. Mm-hmm. And we should take the blinders off when we're dealing with it and deal with it just like we do every other country for the best interests of the United States. And I think we'd see a difference.
Let's move on just a little before we start taking calls. By the way, the number is 654-3555, 654-3555. And I want to ask you a question. Now, two. number one, why have, with all of your background and your feelings, why have you never entered into the ministry of sorts?
I once made a statement on Jimmy Swaggart's program that the only Bible school in the scriptures was a school for Pharisees. The idea of a ministry, the word ministry is a Greek word which means bond slave.
Mm-hmm.
And it means you're a slave to the people that you are trying to help. And that you should be poorer than the poorest one in your congregation or in your group. And that you pour out your life to meet their needs. Well, in the modern day, the word ministry and minister connotates someone that has credentials from some recognized Bible college or school of theology. You know, there's a famous one here in Fort Worth. There's a famous one in Dallas. But the problem with those schools is that they simply, in my opinion, teach error. 300 years ago, somebody made an error in interpretation, and then they just continued it.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that what I see is, I don't think either Jesus Christ or Paul or any of the apostles would recognize modern Christianity. I think they would think it was some evil form of cult.
All right. Question number two. Did you, you may have heard about this before. I read about it today in the paper, but the Roman Catholics now have a new Bible. Another translated version, which I guess the last one was 10, 12 years ago, somewhere in there. Why do they constantly update?
Well, everybody tries. I don't know how many translations that have come out in the last few years, but it's got to be hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And what everyone is trying to do is make the Bible understandable to your mind. And so they take massive liberties with translation in order to make it amenable and...
Doesn't it ultimately, getting passed through generation after generation and hand after hand, lose the ultimate meaning?
Well, it loses...
In most cases.
Yeah, I mean, like this thing they call the Living Bible. I can't say. I mean, it's no more the Bible than the Book of Penthouse is. They've taken total and complete liberties with the translation to make it understandable to the human mind. It's never meant to be understandable to the human mind. It's meant to be understandable by revelation. That's why in the ancient Hebrew times, they never put the vowel points in the language, in the scriptures. It was only someone with revelation could read it. And so, you know, for instance, the word melech in the Hebrew means king or rightful king.
Mm-hmm.
The word molech means phony king or evil king.
Very close.
Melech versus molech.
Mm-hmm.
In looking at the consonants, it's spelled exactly the same way. But you have to add in the vowel points. And the only one that can do that correctly is the one that has revelation.
Yeah.
And what we've done with the modern Bible is we've made it allegedly a way that the human being can be improved, and how you can get rich and how you can have nice relationships and all other kinds of things that simply satisfy that which is not spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say enough bad about the idea of what they've done with the new Bibles.
All right. And the third question that I have before we start taking calls is, last Sunday night after we got off the air, one of the gentlemen in the other room asked me to ask you, how do you take someone, in this case, a Marine, former Marine, that has been, quote, trained to kill, or as I was saying to him, perhaps they would prefer that you look at it as trained to defend yourself from being killed.
By shooting an atomic bomb or something.
Yeah. And with mixed religion with it, and how do you cope with that?
You can't.
There's your answer.
You cannot kill in the name of God under any circumstances.
Okay.
There's another example, and this is an actual case. I interviewed this guy. He was in Romania, and they were having a church group, small group, 20 or 30 people. And Romania was occupied by the Russian army. And two Russian soldiers came walking into the church while they were having a service. And they closed the door behind them, bolted it, walked to the front, leveled two submachine guns at the congregation, and said, "You have 5 minutes to renounce your God. If you don't, you'll be killed. You'll renounce him by getting up and leaving." Well, you can imagine everyone in the audience had great rationalizations. Oh, I can serve God better if I'm alive, or, you know, any one of the thousand ones. Well, who's going to protect my family? Who's going to feed my kids? And so, you know, most of them got up and left. And there were a few left. And then the Russians walked back, rebolted the doors, walked to the front of the congregation, leveled their machine guns, and then laid them down. And said, "Brothers and sisters, we are believers also, but we could not afford to be here unless everyone is 100% sold out." I wonder how many of what modern-day Christianity would do with that.
Tremendous story.
It's a true story.
All right. Number is 654-3555. My guest is Ole Anthony, and we'll be taking your calls until 1 o'clock tonight. And go ahead. Thanks for holding. You're on the Eagle.
Yeah, your friend there was asking about Israel, you know. If you listen to his Bible and throughout history, anybody that messed with Israel sort of paid for it.
Well, that's, you know, granted, up until the cross, all prophecy ended at the cross.
Well, I don't know. You know, I think in the end times here, you know, you better watch out. Anybody messing with Israel, and that's just my belief, so, you know. But I was listening last week, and I heard a cut, you said, a tail end. My friend was on the air last week, and you called my friend Pat Fielder. You called him a whore or something for doing something?
If he's doing something he doesn't believe in to get money, he's a whore.
What did he do, though?
Pardon?
What did he do that made
I believe that that was a man that was calling in here to complain about working for an organization that was raising funds.
That he didn't believe in.
That he didn't believe in.
And well, why would the stupid person work there?
Well, that's why I said he's a whore. If you're doing something you don't believe in, by definition, you're a whore.
Well, that's true. But let me ask you this. You know, on the news tonight, I heard that Jim Baker, the relationship with that con woman, you know?
Right.
She's admitting that there's another preacher involved, too, that she met from Jim Baker. It was on the news tonight. But they're not releasing the name of the other preacher. Do you have any idea who it might be or think it might be?
Oh, I don't care about that kind of stuff. That doesn't mean anything.
Thanks for calling. You're on the Eagle.
Yeah, last week he said something about what's been called by some people a so-called gay church. The church itself, I think you have in mind, is Metropolitan Community Church. But I'm a member of that church, and, you know, everything that I've heard from them is that their Christian church was with an outreach to the gay community. And I wish you'd kind of elaborate on that, but I'll tell you why I go there. I mean, I've gone to Baptist churches and Assembly of God churches and several others, but I found that to go there, you either have to pretend you're straight, which is a lie, which I don't want to do, either that or suffer the condemnation of half the congregation.
Well, let me tell you, friend, any place that doesn't recognize you and accept you without condition can't, in the name of God, call itself a church. But any church that has any other label can also not call itself a church. I once had a friend that during the time of the civil rights activities, and he was a black man and an activist, and people were always coming up to him and telling him about God and religion. And he said once in a very quiet voice, he said, "Don't preach to this black man unless you're willing to accept me into your house just as you are." And I would say that to everyone who uses the name of God in their being. Don't say anything to anyone unless you're willing to accept and take that person in just as you are, including one that's deathly ill with AIDS or any other disease.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I have another question. You know, you hear all these evangelists coming off with some really pretty big outlandish lies about gays, and while they're talking, they always, you know, smile ear to ear, it seems like, while they're expressing their disgust. You know, they say we love you while they're trying to pass laws to put us in jail, and so forth. And I wondered, really, what you thought their motivation was, whether they had a problem with their own sexuality, or whether into some kind of comparative righteousness, or they're just greedy.
Well, it's written that if you judge someone, you're guilty of the same thing you judge them for. What you're consciously against, you're subconsciously subject to. That's the way God designed us, so that we'd know not to judge anyone, except the idiots that use God's name in vain.
Thanks for calling. You're on the Eagle.
Yes. First of all, I'd like to compliment the gentleman. He is a very knowledgeable and well-studied human being, and thanks a lot for your information. Now, my question is...
Thank you, Dad.
I really appreciate this. This is finally after somebody agrees with some of my own statements. Your statement about the Middle East and let's go back 1945. Why, if this is just out of my curiosity, did Israel, why were they judged that piece of land versus, as you say, quote-unquote, Uganda? What was the backing behind? What were the ideas behind? Why did they get this part of such a highly, concentrated area?
Well, again, it was the idea of biblical prophecy, that they think that the prophecies of Ezekiel and elsewhere are sometime in the future, and so the same as evangelical Christians.
Right.
And so they say that it's their right by God's edict for them to have that land. The problem with that statement is God's edict, if they understood that, if they're going to play that game, God says they can have everything from the Nile, from the river of Egypt to the Euphrates.
Exactly.
And so, you know, well, if they're going to go for it all. Don't settle for half best. You know, that way they'd have all that oil money.
Well, do you think that was their thinking with oil and all this stuff, or what do you think it was?
No, I think they're sincere. I think they're sincerely wrong, but they're sincere.
Yeah. Okay, next question, and my last one is, let's go back to, are you familiar with Martin Luther?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Like 1500s, they were selling indulgences.
Right.
The word. I see no difference in what is going on now, as I study Martin Luther for 2.5 years, to what he was protesting against at the, at the Court of Worms. So, do you agree with my statement there?
Yeah, it's in fact, you ought to. At Martin Luther's deathbed, he requested that all his writings be burned except one book that's now almost all of print. It's called Bondage of Will.
Right.
And if there's anybody that's interested in what the Reformation truly meant, I would highly recommend you read the book, The Bondage of Will.
Ah, super. You are something else. I really appreciate your knowledge, and it's a wonder to open up a lot of people's minds. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dad.
You're on the Eagle.
Yeah, I don't understand why you don't think that the Living Bible has anything to do with the St. James Version or whatever.
Well, because it says, it says what, it takes the Bible and tries to make it understandable to your mind, to make it understandable without revelation.
What's wrong with that?
Well, because it produces harlotry instead of a bride. It produces a system where you can retain your own idolatry and still think you're worshiping God. It produces a system where you're worshiping manna instead of God. You're just putting God's name on your chief god. And you still, you have 50 other gods like family or mother or apple pie or America or, any one of whatever your particular bent is. And then the Living Bible translations and some of the other modern ones, they soft soap what it says to such a degree that you not only get by with that kind of idolatry, it encourages that idolatry.
I strongly disagree with that.
Well, why?
Because if you read like the St. James or whatever version, and then you don't understand that, you can go to a Living Bible and read the same verse and get a better understanding.
Yeah, you get a better understanding how to satisfy your own carnal desires and lusts in the name of God. It has nothing to do with God.
It's saying the same thing, but in a different way.
It's not saying the same thing at all. It's totally different. And if you would, I'll I don't want to go through Bible scholarship here, but if you would call our office, I'd be glad to show you exactly where and when and how it's done.
All the verses that I have compared, they mainly say the same thing.
Well, again, let me say to you, it's not fruitful to do this here. Call me at the office, and I'll show you exactly in as many places as you have time to look at what I'm talking about.
Thanks for calling. Let me ask you, as long as we're talking about the office, the Trinity Foundation, which you are president of, for those people that aren't aware of what you do, explain what the Trinity Foundation tries to accomplish.
Well, we began in 1972, in the fall of 1972. I'd had one of these experiences that people read about, or, you know, it's called the Damascus Road experience, where in one moment of time, everything in the world made sense, and I felt myself in the presence of God. And it turned me inside out. And for several months, I tried to go to churches. And I went to every denomination. I went to over 120 different churches over a period of really about 5 years. And when I would go into the church, I would get physically ill. Now, they're probably going to, the people that are listening will say, well, that's because you were a demon or something. But let me tell you what happened. When I saw in the mystery that I no longer had to worry about getting anything, that my problem as a vessel was learning how to give, not get. And I'd go into all these churches, and all they were trying to do is tell me how to get stuff in the name of God. But they were doing it very subtly, how to get the salvation of the isolated self, how I could get the double mantle of God's blessing, with, you know, any one of a thousand things couched in religious terms. They were simply telling me how to get stuff from God.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd seen that each of us, if we let go, already possess all things. And our only purpose in life is to learn how to let that out, learn how to give that which is within us. And so finally, to make a long story short, we tried, you know, I tried hustling in the name of God just like everybody else does. I was a television evangelist. I ran around and spoke and raised money and... which, you know, I've spent a long time feeling sorry about. And then finally it just dawned on me that, you know, we had every rich Christian in America on our board of directors and doing all kinds of things. And I finally just stopped it all and said, you know, again, God, if you're not real, I'm not going to lift my arm again. So the fruit of it was I had to begin teaching. And I resisted that with every impulse in me because But for 5 years, I resisted it, and then I finally started teaching. Now, for the last 10 years, we've been underground. There's been no public expression. I teach a group 6 nights a week.
Why did you resist teaching so much?
Because I knew what it would cost me. Intuited it.
Okay, but the way I would see that would be if, you know, bringing the flock in... Just to, and the expansion of ideas and trading ideas and...
Oh, if I could get by with just giving a 12-minute sermon every Sunday, that'd be, you know, I wouldn't mind that.
Okay. Be home in time for kickoff.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Number is 654-3555, and go back to the phones. You're on the Eagle. Thanks for holding.
Yes, listen, I know you're talking about the living Bible and everything, but he's pretty right in a lot of his ways concerning, I just wonder why it can't, the living Bible just be, you know, it introduces gods, and it's true that a lot of people have gods put before them, but why put it down? Why just leave it as it is? That way, you know, when people read it, they'll at least introduce the idea.
Well, but, you know, who are you? The question is, who are you getting introduced to? The God that's outside of time or the God of this world?
In keeping with what he was saying, you know, it would be very easy, I would imagine, for you to just sit there and say, you know, I'll leave that alone and let somebody else worry about that and not express my opinion and not get hassled about it.
Well, you know, you end up with a position where you don't try to... I'm never going to sit down and try to think about what I'm going to say next. That's an obscenity in the face of God. I don't sit here and, you know, I didn't think I was going to attack the living Bible, and I didn't plan on talking about this or that or anything else, just like I don't when I talk to any group. You just have to be open to whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you respond to it honestly, openly, whatever the cost, and that's the meaning of faith.
All right. Caller, you're there. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I'd like to talk about the Oral Roberts situation.
Yeah.
What do you think about him?
What do I think about Oral Roberts?
Right. He spoke today at Church on the Rock with a real good friend of his, Larry Lee.
Right.
and I'd just like to find out his style of ministry, if his style is something like your style.
Well, let me answer that this way. If I believe that if Oral Roberts, you know, his ministry is primarily based on healing and on what he calls seed faith.
Right.
Well, my question, if his doctrine and his teaching is right, why aren't there 650-year-old millionaires in his church?
Well, you're right there. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of people out here that's going to, you know, disagree with you, but that's your opinion. I have one other question. You said you've been to a lot of churches in Dallas, or...
Well, in this whole area, not just Dallas.
Right around this area. If I was looking for a church today, what church would you recommend?
I'm not in that business.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. You are on the Eagle. Go ahead.
I was wondering what the difference in the real Bible, you know, the original, and what they call the New Testament is.
I mean, what's the difference in the ancient Bible and the New Bible? I mean, the New Testament, the Old Testament, the New Testament?
Yes, sir.
Well, the Old Testament prophesied or told about a desired one, the mystery of God, the mystery of all ages, the mystery of time and space. The New Testament shows that fulfillment in all men.
Oh.
Both of them say the same thing.
I wondered about that for a while.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. You're on the Eagle.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question about Seed Faith.
About what?
Seed Faith Ministry.
Seed Faith, all right.
All right, I'd like to know how they work.
Well, they use faith as a commodity. If you have enough faith, you can get stuff from God. That's how they work.
But that doesn't seem to make any sense.
It doesn't.
So is it just a sham?
Well, they're a sincere sham, but they're still a sham.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is somewhat off the subject, but somewhat on. One of the funniest things that I ever heard was David Steinberg, comedian, was in the studio. I think he was on The Tonight Show or something. And in the next studio over, Oral Roberts was there. And he was conducting a sermon and going through the whole ritual. And during a break in the Oral Roberts festivities where they stopped for a commercial, David Steinberg went over because Oral Roberts had expressed a desire to meet him. And when he walked out on the stage, everybody applauded, you know, it was nice, wonderful, and he walked just fine. He went up to Oral Roberts and he talked just a little. And when he walked off the stage, he limped. Only Steinberg could pull that off. All right, you're listening to The Eagle, KEGL, Fort Worth, Dallas, and my guest tonight is Ole Anthony, and we are talking about a multitude of things. The number is 654-3555, and you're on The Eagle. Thanks for holding.
Hi, I wanted to ask you kind of three questions, two that are kind of related. What is your opinion on the Muslim religion, and do you believe Christ is Jesus' son?
Do I believe Christ is Jesus' son?
God's son, I'm sorry. The son of God, like the Christians believe, he made Mary have this son. Is God in man's form?
I believe that God has a representative of himself in every dimension. In eternity without time, he's God the Father. In time and space, he's God the Son. In space without regard to time, he's God the Holy Spirit. And I believe he has many prophets. Muhammad was his prophet.
Do you believe that Jesus was a prophet for God?
No. Jesus didn't prophesy stuff. Jesus said stuff like, no man can come to God unless he hates his mother, his father, his sister, his brother, yea, and his own wife also. He said, I came not to bring peace, but a sword. Prophets don't get by with that too often. He was much more than a prophet. He was a cosmic event.
What is your opinion about the Muslim belief?
Well, I think if you read the Quran, that much of the early prophecies of Muhammad were right on.
Yeah.
And then as he later and later throughout his life became politicized, much of the prophecies became mixed with the world system and to justify different acts and different things. And it's just like everything else. I mean, that when, as long as any man or religion or any form mixes the revelation of God with political or world or other things, then there will be a lessening of truth. And I believe the early prophecies of Muhammad were right on. The later ones were just like modern Baptists.
What do you think the world should do to with the Palestinian situation? What they should do to help them, or should they help them, in your opinion?
Oh, I'm in so much sympathy with the Palestinians. I can't tell you how much. I've been with them. I've seen them. I know them well. To have 4 to 6 million people disbanded and run out of their property in the name of God, and in the name of political expediency after the Second World War, is just an insult to the human race. And any man of good conscience had better support the Palestinians in getting them a homeland.
Well, how can the United States support Israel and let all the Palestinians all over the world, particularly in Lebanon, right now they're starving to death?
I know. They even asked permission from their mullahs to eat human flesh. That's the condition.
Why doesn't even the people of the United States make their government do something? How come the government can get away with this?
Because in the United States, it's primarily what we would call a Christian or evangelical Christian company may be a better definition. And there's a strange coalition between Zionism, which is the politicizing of the Jewish religion, and evangelical Christianity. And it's blinded the minds of politicians and preachers and everybody else to allow them to allow starvation and everything else in the name of God. And it's got to stop.
Pray with him that somebody does something to help them.
I do too.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You're on the Eagle.
Yeah, I agree with what you were saying about how the Living Bible doesn't really confer with the King James Version and things like that. I was watching the Jimmy Swaggart show once, and he was referring to a scripture, and he had somebody read it from the Living Bible, and then he said, well, wait a minute, that's not it. And he had somebody read it from the King James Version. He said, yeah, that's it. And how can you just go back and forth from each version back and forth and just pick out what you want?
Because that's what everybody does in the name of God. They just pick out scriptures to justify their pre-existent idolatry, and Jimmy Swaggart's one of the worst.
Also, what you said about tithing and things, I don't see how people can, you know, I can understand tithing to, you know, keep the church going, just so you have a place to go to worship and things like that, but when they ask you to tithe 10%, you know, through mail normally, and then they ask you to tithe before church, you know, with offering, and then in the middle of a church and stuff like that. I try to, what you said about the Living Bible, I try to explain that to my parents, you know, and they don't understand that. They don't understand about tithing. They tithe all the time.
Let me maybe give you a different way of thinking about stuff.
Okay.
Every man tithes all the time. You tithe, every man tithes 10% to their chief God. For many in this generation, their chief god is cocaine, and they tithe 10, 20, 30, 40. For some, it's entertainment, alcohol. For some, it's religion. But all men tithe. It's not optional. All men pray 24 hours a day. Your prayers are simply your thoughts. But most people pray to the wrong god. They're praying to the god of whatever their values, their idolatry is, whatever they think is important from the ridiculousness their parents taught them. That's why there's been rebellion in every age by the teenagers, because in that rebellion is your chance to see truth, to see through the ridiculousness that your parents taught you as a value system, to see the one true point of abandonment of self and laying down your life instead of all these ridiculous value systems that parents foist on their children in order to justify their own existence. And that's why, you know, I love the rebellion. I love it. Because that's God's opportunity for that person that's in rebellion to see truth.
Exactly. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Us, are you there?
Ooh, Russ? No, not Russ.
Who's there?
Oh, this is Mike. And, well, Russ is here.
Well, I thought Mike had gone home. Listen, we're going to take...
I wouldn't dare. I wouldn't miss this show for the world.
Yeah. Can we take... Will you guys get to the control thingy so we can take a break?
The control thingy. What's the control thingy?
Right.
Is
punch.
Like something we're using here?
Hold on. That little thingy there, the buttons and dials
buttons,
on it.
Dials. Hold on.
Please get to it so I can take a break.
and other things. Go ahead, play us a song, and we'll be back after this on The Eagle.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks, Rich. Russ, what do you want to play?
I don't know. Play anything.
Madonna?
Play a nice 2-minute song. It'll just barely giving time to get there, but not back.
Oh, that'll be fun. Thank you very much. Madonna on The Eagle.
What's that called? Stepping on?
Just a little bit, but, you know, I'm out of practice. Just one reason that they have me doing the talk show now. It's 12:10. My guest tonight is Ole Anthony, part two. And if you just join us, we're taking your calls at 654-3555. You talked just a little bit before the break about teenagers in rebellion and how you like that idea. What would you say to a 16-year-old that would come to you now and say, Mr. Anthony, you know, my life is weird anyway because I'm 16 years old and trying to get used to the way things are. But when I look around and I see various things in the world where the ministers that I hear about, like the Jim Bakers and the Swaggerts and the Oral Roberts, what do you say to them to try and just point them down the road and say, now, wait a minute, this isn't the way things really are?
Well, first of all, the first thing that's always been said is you've got to be honest. That's the only requirement that God ever placed on man. And if he's done any more than that, then God failed, and he didn't. And in that honesty, at the point of remember when you were a teenager?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it's been a long time, I know.
Yes.
But, I mean, there was a point where you question everything.
Yeah.
And somehow, after that point, you sort of, I mean, all of us, sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And we sold out to a system that demanded our compromise, that demanded our soul, demanded a piece of us, that we've got to return, or we've got to get it back. We've got to get that piece of honesty back. We've got to stop this. I mean, the stuff that goes on in the name of God today is as I said earlier, I don't think that the Apostle Paul would recognize it as a church. I mean, it's so, the idea, that the thing I told you before, that in the first century, if anyone asked for money, they were a false apostle and kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, that's all it's done. Turn on the radio or television. I mean, that's all they do. They not only ask for money, they don't have to compete like you do on The Eagle. What they do is the program owners and operators of the religious radio stations and television stations, they sell blocks of time,
right.
15, 30-minute blocks of time.
So ratings really don't mean anything.
They don't even care about ratings. They don't even, you know, they sell time, and then they tailor that message to meet whoever's going to give them money. And most of the people that are giving them money are, if you look at the demographics, 49 to 64-year-old women and older, mm-hmm. who are widows or lonely or frustrated and sexually or whatever way, and they're trying to have meaning to their stupid lives, and so they glue themselves onto one of these evangelists
mm-hmm.
on radio or television, and they send in their life savings because that's the only thing that gives them meaning. It's just as bad as cocaine. You know, I told you before last week that the idea of having a electric church is like having a rubber doll wife.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Fix the need, get the fix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just the opposite of why time and space were created. The idea that we must get to know each other well enough so we can no longer act. So, do you know that in the first century, a church had to be at least 10, but no more than 20 people? If it was more than 20, then it expanded, went somewhere else. Now, I mean, now a church with 20 people is a total failure.
Oh, yeah. Churches with 600 are not.
And
6,000.
And there's this idiot in Korea that has a church of 110,000 members.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one in Dallas that has 27,000 members. I mean, how in the world can they expect to be what they're supposed to be, having 27,000 members going to a building? Okay.
Come on, get fired up. Come on.
No, this isn't fired up. I want to tell you, what would God say to the church in America today?
I
Can I try one on you?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is about 2 or 3 minutes.
All right.
I think he'd say, O evil and perverse generation, have I been so long in your midst and you have perceived me not? Have I not met your needs in 1,000 ways and you have been blind? When I speak to you, you do not hear. You behave not as sons and daughters, but as strangers. You hold meetings in my name and give honor to men, but not to me. You boast that you serve me, but in truth you serve your own ego. For that which you do is calculated to enhance your own position and advance your own prestige, and you give it all a sanctimonious cloak. See, you say, we shall pray. Well, prayer is farthest from your hearts. Prayer is for those whose hearts cry unto me in sincerity and who seek me earnestly, not for those with only a pretended piety and with hearts made fat with self-adulation and only playing with me as a child would manipulate a puppet on a string. Get to the prayer closet. That is the reason I taught you to pray in secret, for there you are beset by fewer false motives and less temptations. He who does not habitually commune with me alone in prayer is almost sure to find true prayer impossible in public. You'd make your religion pleasant and acceptable. You would make it comfortable and accommodating to your own schedule. Your Savior knew nothing of such a false religion. Lonely nights he wrestled in prayer. He spared not the flesh discomfort. Yes, and the more you pamper your flesh as to bodily comfort, the more it shall demand of you until your physical needs become a tyrant unto you in your own house. Be not deceived, I gave you no such commandment. Hear me as I repeat to you what I gave to your fathers. Abandon yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. Yes, follow me, not some worldly form of a backslidden church. Think not that it becometh blessed because it bears the name church. My church is a living body, not a dead form. My people may be recognized by their humility and suffering, not by their social acceptability or self-advertised success, not by extravagant physical appointments of their buildings, but by the grace of God at work in their hearts. Sacrifice is my status symbol, and man has not been eager to duplicate the spiritual leadership I had in servants like Paul or Jeremiah. Do you desire to follow me truly? Then follow the blood-stained prints of my feet. Go, as it were, to the cold and yielding rock in the Garden of Gethsemane, where self is put aside and the cup of sufferings accepted. Die to your own treacherous and deceitful heart. Then rise with determination to go on unflinchingly, not hoping to spare your life. Save your life, and you will surely lose it. Offer it up to me this very day, this very second, in a renewal of consecration and a sacrificial living, and I will accept you, and you shall know joy as new wine.
Had to ask. All right. Holy. Now, do not misinterpret what I'm about to ask you. Where did you get that?
What does that mean? Where did I get it? I said it.
I know you said it, but I mean, you said it like nobody I've ever seen before. And I mean, sitting here, I mean, this was not something... I'm telling you, this guy's incredible. You guys in the other room can't see this, but I mean, there's no book in front of him, there is no passage, and this isn't obviously something that he memorized before we started tonight. That's incredible.
Well, I don't think it is. It's just...
No, I mean, what I'm saying is that the feeling is what transmits the signal. So, you know, you've definitely got the feeling.
What would God... Let me show you the other side of that same coin. What would God say to that teenage girl that's just broken up and she's lonesome and she has nobody with her and her parents, she can't talk to anybody? Let's call her. Her name is Lisa.
Okay.
Dear Lisa, I see your loneliness. I see your fears. I see your guilt and frustration. I see your endless search for love and fulfillment. All this must be in order for you to come to the end of your own understanding. Then you can hear my voice. Listen carefully amid the noise of the world, and you will hear, I love you. I shed my blood to make you clean. You are new, so believe it is true. You are lovely in my eyes, and I created you to be exactly as you are. Don't criticize yourself or get down for not being perfect in your own eyes. That leads only to frustration. I want you to trust me. One day, one step, one second at a time. Dwell in my power and my love and be free. Be yourself. Don't allow other people to run you. I will guide you if you let me. But be aware of my presence in everything. I give you love and joy and peace and patience. No one else can. But take your eyes off yourself, totally off yourself. I lead. I change. I make.
but not when you are trying, for I will never fight your efforts. Let me have the joy of making you what I want. My love is perfect. My will is sufficient. I will supply your every need with absolutely no effort on your part. I love you. Signed, your Heavenly Father.
Okay, there's one quick way to get on with this thing. You're on the Eagle.
Yes, sir. I'll get the radio on. I don't know if it's causing you any problems or not.
No, go ahead.
I had a couple questions. I've been listening for a while, and one statement going into it, I'm very encouraged by the seriousness of your search for what is real and true, and it's probably because I haven't heard enough. That's why I wanted to just be real direct, asking some questions. Are you a Christian? Do you call yourself a Christian in that? Do you believe, for instance, you spoke a good bit of scripture and mentioned, I know your view on Muhammad, I'm sure it was limited. I mean, you didn't, not your view meaning, but the way you're able to express it, time and all that stuff inhibits, and so I'm sure I've probably heard half of everything you'd want to say. Through that, Christ said no one comes to the Father except through me. And to me, being a Christian says that Christ is the fulfillment of all the law, like Colossians.
Yeah, but wait a minute. What you've just said, listen to what you just said. Uh-huh. If no man can come to the Father but by him, that's not a moral option. That's a cosmic fact. Do you understand the difference? One makes it your choice. The other makes it an eternal fact, like the fact that you have a liver. Well, no one comes to the Father except by him. It's not a choice. Well, you can't choose him any more than you can choose, you know. The idea of accepting him as your personal savior is an abomination. It says that nowhere in the scriptures. You can't choose him, and don't be a party to anything that gives you the option of that choice. You can recognize that he's your life, that he's always been it. He's the light that lighteth all men. And live it. Live it as a mystery, not a problem to be solved. Live it in love, laying down your life, speaking against every bit of hypocrisy and idolatry that you see. Don't accept and mix the world system and Americanism or any other ism with that revelation. And above all, don't act. Don't be like these Sunday morning Christians that put on their Sunday best and go and sit in little rows and are sitting there having no, you know, they don't even know who's next to them, so they have to fake things out. Do you have a brother or a sister?
Yeah, you're talking about in family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever call them Brother Jim or whatever his name is?
Sometimes I'll introduce somebody and say, this is my brother.
I know, but in your topical conversation, what's your brother's name? What's his name?
One of them's Jamie.
Okay. You would never say, Brother Jamie, I'm here to tell you, brother. You would talk to him as a person. The only reason modern Christianity uses the titles of brother and sister is because they're not sure who they are. And so they have to reemphasize their stupid positions by saying, oh, this is brother, brother, praise God, brother. They use praise as a punctuation mark to just cover their lack of understanding.
Okay, can I interject something here? It's not necessarily an opposition. Do you think that could be a way of them practicing their faith?
No. No, it's a way of covering. It's the natural man. It's the mind's way of showing hypocrisy.
Okay. One other thing. It sounds to me, and I'm not trying to. I mean, you know, this is your platform, so inevitably your statements are going to last longer than anybody else. But it seems to me that you have not, I guess, found to your satisfaction this being believably practiced in any church. And I'm not pushing any church. I'm not going to mention any church. I'm just going to say that that I believe we're all limited in our view of God. I mean, even the Bible says that.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not to the millions and millions of people that are sitting in churches and sincerely trying. I'm saying keep on trying, but do it honestly. And don't. And what I'm speaking against is these idiots that have gone to college and think they've learned about God in college and come off in $400 suits and they spend $25 a week on hairspray and start and $1,000 on tooth caps and try to sell their religion. That's what infuriates me, and it's ridiculous. And sure, if you're a people out there, don't buy it. It's a lie.
Sure, and it will be exposed that way. And
well, there's a whole lot of millions and millions that aren't understanding.
Well, that's true. I was having a hard time understanding exactly where your point. That's one reason I wanted to call, because I think that someone with the heart sensitivity or whatever you want to call it. I'm not trying to boast on anything in you. I think that it's silly to boast in the flesh in any way. But, it seems like we're all limited. Like I said, and you just kind of reaffirmed understanding on that.
Okay, well, all I'm asking you to do is be honest. Just be honest.
Right. Let me ask you one other question, then I'll get off of this, if that's okay.
One more. Quick
one. One thing I understood you saying that all prophecy was fulfilled at the cross or at the birth of Christ. I can't remember which one you said.
At the cross.
Would you say that, is that part of what you're saying, is that there's no literal second coming of Christ, that in fact the kingdom of heaven is a higher state of conviction or awareness to what God would call us to be as in the beginning, him creating us in his image, being led by the Spirit first, or is there a literal, in your opinion, return of Christ? I believe the Bible says...
Okay. You asked me a question. I'll answer it when you get off the phone. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
The idea of the second coming, when he appears, it'll be the end of time. Revelation says, when the mystery of God is completed, time shall be no more. And everything in the universe will have to pass through a dot that's smaller than your eye can see. Now, how do I know that? There's some interesting stuff.
How do you know that?
I was a geophysicist by education. There's, in high school, in freshman calculus back at the University of Arizona, we had to do something. And a professor that was very creative said, okay, I'm going to give you the model of the universe. And you sit down and calculate what size of the container would be to hold everything in the universe if space were taken out. Mm. You can do that. It's a calculable mm-hmm. thing. Okay, at that time, this was, I won't tell you how many years ago that was, but it was a long time ago. Everything in the universe, if space were taken out, would have fit into an 8-ounce water glass. Because you, if I knock on this microphone, which I know everybody hates, but I'll do it anyway, bam, bam, the reason that's hard is because the molecules are moving fast.
Right.
And the only thing that gives space dimension is time. I know we're getting a little weird, but now if you did that same experience that I described, they've gone deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into the atom. Now everything in the universe would fit into a dot that's smaller than your eye can see. And the only thing that gives space dimension is the passage of linear time. Well, if time is no more, whap, it's done. It's finished.
Make it very simple. All right. 654-3555 is the number, and you're on the Eagle. Thanks for holding.
Yes, I wanted to ask O.A. about one thing about miracles. Does he believe that miracles happen? And when miracles do happen, how can you tell if they're godly miracles or satanic forces? And another thing, I want to know how he felt about women. Do women possibly hold some key to the solution of the problems here on Earth?
I think women hold the key to all problems. Of course, anything that puts your eyes on yourself is not of God. You can bet on it. Anything, and with regard to women, the purpose of woman on Earth is to reveal the mystery of the bride, the purpose of life. And if we could look at women, we would see the mystery. If we could see him truly. Okay?
Thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
654-3555 is the number. You're on the Eagle.
Hello, yes. I've got a question about, basically, the accuracy of all the versions of the Bible. Are there actual facts written down that reinforce the words of the Bible?
Well, first of all, there's many facts. All archaeological discoveries in recent years have reinforced it, if you look at them. But more than that, there's a different kind of a concept that you need to address, or we need to think about, and that is that the Bible isn't the Word of God. It's words about the Word, the Logos, the essence. And that's its function.
Right.
And the Logos, the essence, the purpose, is now in you.
Yeah.
Let them out. Be free. Don't worry about philosophies and theories, and just you be you, and that's all that's required. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks. You're on the Eagle.
Hi. I was wondering what you felt Jesus' greatest accomplishment was on earth while he was down here.
Dying. That's why he was born. And then his resurrection, and then the placing of that life in you was his greatest accomplishment.
Also, I had one other thing. You said a while ago that you didn't think you could choose Jesus.
That's right.
What did you mean by that?
Well, that's exactly right. You can't make a conscious decision. Jesus is what's left when everything that you can think about is gone.
Okay, but he said that you couldn't come to the Father but by him.
He also said you can't choose him. Look it up. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're speechless.
No, I'm thinking.
Talk show hosts aren't supposed to think.
Yeah, well, I, with you as a guest, I have to think about what I'm going to ask before I ask it. With the problems not only in the Mideast today, and this has been an ongoing problem for years, but you read about the Pope and the visit to Chile, and is it this communist fear that we have around the world, where we're thinking that if there's a problem in a country, the communists are going to move right in, which has been the thought in some places in the Middle East and in justifiably in some cases, and especially in South America. Don't pay any attention to that.
To what you just said, or to the light?
To the light flashing. The question is, the people in South America are a very poor people.
Right.
What are the answers down there?
Well, you know, I don't have any answers, except that with regard, we always, and it's not just America, every country does it, you always assume or give your enemy power.
Mm-hmm.
You do that. We always assume that Russia is doing everything exactly right and we're doing it wrong. They do too. They assume we are doing everything right and they're a big danger to them and they're doing everything wrong. No, they don't say that publicly, but it's the nature of man to ascribe perfection or greatness to his enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting psychological phenomenon. It always happens throughout history.
But it's the people around the world, especially with recent events in South America, that are paying the price for that.
That's true. And you know, it's there's not going to be peace on earth, Rich. It's not going to happen. Hmm. You know.
Okay.
Can I read you something?
Yes.
This I wrote a little while ago. And this is sort of like you know, okay, I'll personalize it.
Okay.
This is to you.
Oh.
All right?
Thanks.
You may not like it.
All right.
Don't say thanks yet.
Okay.
Will it be today? What can make you arise from your spiritual death? Shall love songs from the earth herself awaken my love, my fair one? Shall a cup of cold water stir the remembrance in your heart of the garden where we walked and talked together? Shall a smell of a flower turn your head to my love waiting to be received? What shall unlock the death of your selfishness? Shall a blaze of a comet's light prompt you to inquire of me? Shall a display of my universe spectacular taunt your curiosity to wonder who I am? Will the words love your neighbor as yourself challenge you to know me further? Shall love expressed in death impress you to repent? Will the falling leaves remind you of your fall from my presence? Will the icy hand of winter pull you toward my warmth and forgiveness? What shall it be? For I shall try all things to reach you. I will call to you in each crash of thunder, pound at your heart with tears of my rain. I will rage in the chamber of your darkness, standing as the only light within your cavern of death, waiting, waiting, waiting for the breaking of your pride, that you might be set free and live.
That's beautiful.
But that's the message, don't you see?
Yeah, sure.
Everyone, everybody, they've covered that reality, that gut instinct, with their own ideas and opinions that have been foisted on them by others. And we have wars and governments and organizations and systems all, you know, all trying to return to a state that you already have with no effort on your part. I mean, it's like, You know, what's the driving force? Why do you work your butt off? You know, to make a living. Well, that's the lie of cause and effect. Cause and effect is the largest lie in the universe.
Okay, this all ties together with what you were saying before about rebellion with the teenagers. And I'll tell you, just my own humble little opinion here is where I think most people go wrong in what they get blamed for a lot, and what they're actually doing is just they're asking questions and questioning, you know, the moral standards that are being handed to them by generations that came before. But where they go wrong is they stop asking the questions.
Right. That's exactly right. Can I tell you a couple stories?
Can we take a quick break?
Sure.
I'll only take a second. Hit it, guys. Don't hit it. Get a note, handed a note, and they want to take a break, and...
We were just trying to pretend like we were in the bathroom. You did the same thing.
Right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Attention, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all ships at sea. Flag!
Royal Waterbiz, where quality is king.
Rich, are you there?
Yes.
All right. You're on.
Oh, thank you. Okay, stop that now. All right, waterbed commercial or something. It's 12:40, and we are talking with Ole Anthony. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I was going to tell you a couple of stories that happened to me that speak to this idea of the rebelliousness and the reason for it. When I was very young, my parents were Lutheran, and in the Lutherans are almost Catholics. I mean, they're not called pastors, they're priests and that kind of thing.
So Episcopalians.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And, but I had to go to this little class for catechism. And I was, I think, you know, real young, 6'5", 6'7", something in that age. My mother said I was never young, by the way. And I kept asking questions that the priest couldn't answer. Like, if God is such a great, if he loves us so much, how come he permits there to be a hell? If God is the only God, why is there good and evil? You know, on and on and on. And the priest, I mean, it was, and I was just a little kid asking questions. Well, you know what that guy did? He went to my parents and asked them not to let me come to catechism class because he said I was an evil child. Mm. Now, there's a whole lot of people in the audience that are probably going to agree that I'm still an evil child. But the point of it was, is that turned something in me. And it manifested itself a few years later when I was 17. I lived in a resort town, as you know, in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And every Easter, this is the dude ranch capital of the world. There's nothing there. There used to be 23 dude ranches all over the mountains. Don't start on me, Rich. I'll pick on Tucson.
It's Arizona propaganda, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead.
All right.
Wickenburg propaganda.
Arizona. Go ahead. You know what Wickenburg means, by the way?
What?
No, I'm not going to tell you. But they have this Easter sunrise service, right?
Yes.
And all the dudes get on their little horses, some of them very gingerly with very old horses, and they ride before sunrise, and they ride out to a natural amphitheater in the mountains there. And there's a big 40-foot cross, and they have an Easter sunrise service and breakfast. Well, I went out a half hour before the Easter sunrise service and set the cross on fire. Well, it turned out that Henry Luce or one of the Luce relatives were staying at the biggest ranch there. And it made the national news.
Yeah.
And they thought it was the communists and the Ku Klux Klan and all that kind of stuff. But what had happened was I lived right next door to this deputy sheriff. And I had an old Packard, a 1947 Packard that looked like a tank. And I had backed it against the cross so I could climb up high to throw the gas way up in this so I could make a better fire. And, well, about a month later, I was out one morning talking to the sheriff, and he looked down at my back wheels, and they'd taken tire prints.
Uh-huh.
And I was given a choice. Either, you know, go to the jail or get out of town. but the point is, I was ultimate rebellion, and I had no one to talk to who understood.
Didn't you get expelled from school for refusing to capitalize the word God?
Yes, I was kicked out of high school because I wouldn't capitalize God on a world history report.
Were you not an honor student as well?
Yeah, I don't want to go into that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's important though that you weren't some bum kid. That...
I'm a bum kid. Still am. Huh. But the idea is that somehow there has to be an expression to foister or to encourage honesty. And the idea of what normally parents call rebellion in their children is simply, you know, them questioning. And parents, since they don't know what they believe, they figure a question is a threat to their existence. And so, I mean, that's why it's so vital that there be some expression to encourage this kind of honesty so that, you know, we can understand and see through the mystery. And the idea of now it's like we're back in the 50s now. I mean, with, you know, it's like yuppiedom again, and that's the way it was in the 50s when mm-hmm. I grew up. And, you know, everything was cool and nice, and everything is phony, and everything, you know, money is the big deal, and it's, well, money is nothing. And people know that, yet they sell their souls to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just think that we need to somehow provide a forum, on an avenue of honesty, so that what goes on, you know what Einstein called, what happens is that the parents then say, well, you know, you're an evil child, you don't have a conscience, on and on and on. Do you know what Einstein called the conscience? It was all the idiosyncrasies you learned from your parents before you reached the age of reason. I mean, conscience is a ridiculous concept. It's not, you know, the only thing the Bible says about the conscience is that it should be emptied so you can return to that dependency of a small child. Live and not judge for yourself good and evil, but live in that moment of dependency.
Right. You ready for some more?
Sure.
Okay. Number is 654-3555. And you're on Eagle. Thanks for holding.
Yes. What's your guest name one more time?
Ole Anthony.
Okay. I'm a film producer in Las Colinas area.
Funny, he's done that as well.
Well, that's what was going on. I'm working at my desk tonight, working on a script for a movie we're already in full production on. And I listened to some of the things he had to say about Oral Roberts and Jim Baker and the like, and realized that we have an immediate connection on the film that we're in process of doing right now. And my question for him was, our film deals with an actual second coming of Christ, and it's in a kind of a science fiction fantasy-based realm. It is going to be distributed worldwide.
Well, what's your question?
The question is what he thought would occur should something like that happen, or if he thought anything like that would happen before, like, say, Armageddon.
Well, my point to you, Armageddon's already happened. It's happening in you right now. Spiritually, when he returns in the clouds, the time is over. Time is no more. Read, you know, if you're a Bible student, which you obviously are, read the second book of Peter. It talks about it.
Right.
I mean, this idea of, you know, God's going to come along and then he's going to rapture you and you're going to go upstairs somewhere and hang around and you come back down is like, you know, spiritual yo-yos.
Right.
That's a ridiculous, stupid concept that the first century knew nothing about and only started in the 1800s.
Right.
And the modern theology and people like the Schofield Memorial Church or Bible Church and all that theological center over there and the late great planet Earth and all of that garbage,
right.
it's not right. It's simply garbage that modern Christianity has foisted on the world. I mean, he's not, when he comes back, when it's the idea of not coming back is that time is gone. You know, I'm sure your movie's about what's going to happen. There's going to be 3 million people missing and airplanes. That's stupid.
You're on the Eagle.
Yeah, I have a couple questions for Mr. Anthony.
Go ahead.
The choice. God does give us a choice about whether to accept him or reject him.
No, that's nowhere in the scriptures. You've gotten that from your preacher who got it from... That's nowhere. It says to them that received him, he gave them the ability or the efficacy to become the sons of God, and it says all men received him.
Well,
okay. So don't, that's ridiculous. Go back and study your beginning Greek. That's ridiculous.
You're on the Eagle.
Yeah, I was just going to ask this guy.
Mr. Anthony, yes.
This guy is more appropriate.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering who made... who made you, who enhanced you to know all these things that you know or have been enlightened by, and everybody else wrong?
Well, it's, I have the same right to speak that you do, and all I'm saying to you is challenge me. Challenge me on some basis other than opinion. Challenge me on the basis of ancient text or scripture or definition or anything else, but don't challenge me on opinion. Okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling. What was it, he, taking from the last caller, but what was it that prompted you to move into the area? You said you had one of those...
Well, in I could give you exact time. I mean, some people can't, but I can. January 17th, 1972, about 8:30 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those rare creatures that had accomplished everything that I wanted to. I had no more unfinished goals, and I was bored to death. And I said, God, if you're real, and it was an if, it was a big if. I said, God, if you're real, then show me something, and I don't care what it costs. And I left time. I could have been gone for 1,000 years. It turns out, I mean, with the people that around me, they said I was gone for about an hour and a half in real time. But it's at that moment in time, at that point, everything in the universe made sense. Every flower had its meaning. Every person I understood. Every mystery was revealed. And I know that sounds arrogant, but I can't help it. A subjective revelation is worthless. And so I've spent the last 15 years doing word studies and translating and testing it against everything, looking for loopholes.
Mm-hmm.
There are none. I challenge and encourage open forums where everybody takes their best shot. And
the Trinity Foundation gives people, correct me if I'm wrong, the opportunity to get together and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Exchange ideas.
We meet nightly.
Okay. You're on the Eagle.
Hello, Mr. Anthony?
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to talk a little bit about economics and government as opposed to religion.
All right.
You're familiar with, of course, the growing world economy, how the economic systems of different countries affect other countries, like, of course, the oil situation.
Right.
How do you see the world economic system developing in the future?
I have a friend that... Okay, I have a friend that owns a television network in Canada, and he's a very wealthy man. And he commissioned the Toronto University to do a study of the price of gold based on the amount of debt in the free world. Get ready. He predicted, based on the amount of debt in the free world, that by 1990, the price of gold will be $2,000 an ounce.
By now?
By 1990. By 1995, the price of gold will be $5,000 an ounce. And on and on, until about the year 2000, it'll be $50,000 an ounce. And there's no government in the free world that can withstand that kind of economic pressure. We're living in a dream world in the Western world. Debt, America's a debtor nation. It's a ridiculous concept. We're going to see, I don't mean to be a prophet of doom, but we're going to see a depression that'll make 1929 look like child's play, and it's going to happen within the next few years, very few years.
With all this pressure, do you see the economics of different countries becoming more intermixed with one another and becoming more involved with each other? Or perhaps
they already are. You know, now that's why it's this. That's why an economic disaster of these proportions is possible, because throughout history, if you look at your history books, every 50 years there's been a depression. We were due one in 1979. It was financed. We were financed out of it, primarily by Japanese and Arab money. We didn't have it then, but now we are, and it's the huge, huge billions and trillions of dollars of debt that is now foisted upon us. That can't continue.
Mr., do you see that then polarizing the countries, like different countries pulling apart from each other for the most part, or do you see more cooperation between countries trying to work out their economic differences?
Well, I mean, when people are hungry, economic differences are meaningless. Rich, there's an interest. I challenge you to do something.
Okay.
In 1972, the president, Nixon, signed an executive order It's an executive order of 11490. And if you remember at that time is when there was street rioting and Vietnam, and there was a lot, I mean, there was people were worried whether the government could continue. And this particular executive order codified all previous executive orders. And it did something strange. It gave the president or the office of the presidency the right during times of internal crisis to take over all FCC-regulated activity, all banking activity that's regulated by the federal, that's insured by the federal bank, to stop trading on the stock markets, in effect, to become a benevolent dictatorship with
so
a stroke of a pen.
No word but his.
Right. And at the only basis upon which that act, and by the way, to stop all national elections, I challenge you to get a copy of that executive order and show it to the public. Executive Order 11490.
All right.
And do a program on it. You'd find it fascinating.
What was the name of that again?
It's Executive Order 11490, issued in 1972.
Okay, sounds interesting.
All right, thank you, caller. All right, you'll be listening that night, I take it.
You'll have to let me know.
All right, you're on the Eagle.
Hi, I believe in God and I believe in the devil, right? But I have a higher power, and it's like I don't worship God and I don't worship the devil, but I kind of worship this higher power.
I know, you worship the higher power. Its name is Self.
Self.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yourself. Yes.
Yeah, yourself is the greatest, highest power. Do you know, Rich, that all of the hell Lindsay's worrying about the Antichrist? Do you know who the Antichrist is? You.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind. All men. He set himself up in the temple of God and proclaims himself to be as God because he judges for himself good and evil. Your mind and all men's mind are the Antichrist. That's why Christ said, take no thought for tomorrow.
Sonny. Get one more. All right. Let's do that, and then I've got a question. You're on the Eagle.
Yeah. I have a statement to make about, some religion. On the Living Bible, you know, people were calling in saying, you know, Living Bible is right and everything. I think the Bible, you know, what most people don't see is it was written for something that everybody can have their own translation to.
Oh, come on. This is ridiculous.
Okay, here. You're on the Eagle. Last call.
Yes. I would like to ask Mr. Anthony several questions here.
No, you got time for one.
Real quick, prepared for one. Okay. What I'd like to address quickly is talking about the...
Well, do it quickly,
Bible,
then.
Talking about the Living Bible.
Okay, do it quickly.
One thing about it is it's not a translation. It's a paraphrase.
I know. That's what makes it so sick.
Right, it's a paraphrase. So one thing I'd like to say, though, is dealing with, you said it shouldn't be used at all.
That's right.
I kind of like what one lady said. She said, you know, it got the gospel, or actually the guy, I think, got the gospel in to the lives of some people who might not ever understand the other way.
Yeah, but it got the wrong gospel. Thank you.
But hold on.
No, look, you're making a speech. If you want to be on the program, call Rich.
We're out of time. I've got to move along. Thank you. All right. Guys cut off by two of the best, mind you.
See, you're much more gentle than I used to be.
I hosted a dynamite talk show. Someday I would like to... Do you have air checks of those?
Somewhere.
All right. We'll dig them up. All right.
The reels have probably exploded by now.
Give the number for the Trinity Foundation. You don't want to give the number?
I'll give it. It's Trinity Foundation in Dallas. It's in the phone book, but it's 827-2625. And we, you know, call if you're interested. We have nightly forums for you to challenge the truth.
All right.
Can I read something? One more thing?
Close with it. Let me ask you a question.
Right.
Now, you have sat here tonight, and...
I called you the Antichrist.
I can overlook the small things. And forecast basically doom and gloom for our beloved United States here with the price of oil and depressions and like we've never seen before.
Right.
What advice?
Simplify your life. Get out of debt. Quit believing the lies. For those in Texas, don't use this new law that's coming out so that you can mortgage your home. Don't believe the lies of debt. Get out of debt, simplify your life. It's a lot more fun that way.
But if everybody goes down the tubes.
Well, then you won't have any debt.
I like the way you think. Okay, now, go ahead.
This is another one of those things, okay?
Okay.
We'll close with it. I think you're going to close on me, right?
Mm-hmm.
The golden of my sunset reflect my warmth, and the flight of the white eagle tells of my grace, soaring into the heights of mountains unclimbed, set in place by the etchings of my hand. The redness of the rose, its depth and color, tell of my intensity and my majesty. The sensitivity of a violet tells you of my softness and understanding. The roaring of the waves, the rumble of the thunder, and the tender falling of my rain make the symphony of heaven, accented by the wind crying at the doors to your heart. My snowflakes falling like petals of love upon the black earth, crystallizing my purity for all to see. The wilderness with its terrain of jagged rocks and liberated brush, growing wildly at will amidst the dry ground flanked by stones and sprays of grass thrown here or there. A witness to the free form of my creation. The unyoked liberty at will available to all who will come into my rest. The glassy smoothness of a hidden lake behind the walls of my hand-carved canyons. The pools clear and life-giving. This rest put there for you, a weary traveler. Enter into that rest today.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rich.
We will. We have left callers unanswered, and I apologize for that. We will do our best to have Mr. Anthony back as soon as possible. And my thanks again to Mr. Anthony and to all of the callers. You're listening to the Eagle, KEGL, Fort Worth, Dallas. And back to you, Russ.
It's just past 12:55. Time to take off on a 55-minute nonstop Eagle free flight of back-to-back rock and roll hits.
KEGL.
Yeah, baby.
We'll be right back.